One of the things that I came across that was published by one devotee who has a degree in counseling was what is considered by modern psychologists to be, what are they, I forget the name. Somehow or other it escapes me, but they've given it, you know, psychologists give names to certain mental symptoms or emotional psychological symptoms people have. You know, nice names, sometimes scary names. But anyway, there, she had listed a symptom of an unhealthy psychological state. And one of the symptoms is that a person is dependent upon others for instruction, that they can't make decisions themselves. So, does anyone remember if we spoke about this? That they're, it's like what they say is they're addicted to being guided. You know, what do you think I should do? Like every, you know, it could be simple decisions. What do you think I should I do this? Should I do that? They can't. They're very indecisive. They can't think well for themselves, which you might say is a good thing. And in some cases, it is a good thing, especially when you don't know. It's not a good thing in making simple, don't remember so much. Okay. Well, if no one remembers this, then let's start, let's begin at this point, and then we'll see where it takes us. So the premise of the point I'm making now is that, well, let me go back a little bit. I've made this, I want to make a point, and I've made it before, and it's worth making again. Our scriptures talk about the process of a disciple finding a guru and what should the disciple look for. And of course, obviously, the guru should be in a bona fide disciplic succession. And specifically, for us as members of ISKCON, he should be within ISKCON. And as the present system goes, he should be someone. Well, when you have devotees who are approved, you can accept others who are not approved. We talked about it briefly. A devotee should be initiated. To be a guru, he should be initiated. If you're in ISKCON, he should be within ISKCON and should be given an approval. And if he hasn't been given approval, any devotee could ask any disciple of Prabhupada or even any disciple of a guru who has left to accept initiation, and they would just have to get approved to do that, or authorized, or not objected. There would have to be no objection to them doing that. So, one of the injunctions of finding a guru, traditionally, one of the obstacles, I think, is removed a bit in ISKCON. But if there was no ISKCON, then you would have to find a guru, and you'd have to ascertain, according to your understanding of Shastra, what Shastra teaches you to be, what Shastra teaches to be a bona fide guru, you would have to ascertain, does this person have the qualifications? It's less of an issue in ISKCON. So, and we've discussed this before, and so, although Shastra says this, that is less of a concern and generally not really concerned, is this person bona fide? If it wasn't bona fide, then the GBC would have stated that long ago, that this person who has been initiating is no longer qualified to initiate because, whatever the reason may be, because of the fact that he did this or that. And sometimes it may be something as simple as that he's left ISKCON. Not that he's done anything else wrong, but he's left ISKCON. So the GBC would, if they found, if it came to their attention that a person was not qualified, they would investigate that, and then they would make an official statement saying that this person is no longer authorized to initiate or whatever. So in that sense, that injunction of Shastra is not really something this kind of devotees have to worry about. You'd only perhaps have to worry about it if you wanted to take initiation from someone and GBC said, well, this person's not authorized to initiate, and we don't see that he's qualified. And if you felt he's qualified, then you'd have a problem. And then if he gave you initiation, it wouldn't be recognized in ISKCON. And that hasn't happened yet. So, but just as a side discussion, that I think you know that if someone desires to give initiation, or someone wants that person to give initiation, and they're not officially recognized as a guru in ISKCON, then there is a little process they go through just to make sure that they are following strictly the principles of Krishna consciousness, and they understand philosophy well enough to guide others. So even if you wanted to accept someone as guru who's not yet on that list, that person would have to go through that process. And there's discussion about that, and others are suggesting that that shouldn't be the process, that it should be the disciple who decides. So until that day comes where it's kind of been opened up to anyone, anyone can be guru, and anybody could accept anybody. Of course, that day won't come, but there'll be a classification that they could say anyone, you can accept anyone who is initiated devotee in good standing whose guru has left, and you don't need approval. Then you have to decide. So that was more the traditional system. There wasn't anybody deciding for you. Is this person authorized? It was just you decide. Of course, there have been situations in our history where a spiritual master may tell someone who's not initiated, take initiation from this person. That person could be acting as a siksha guru. That person could be someone's father, and they say, take diksha from this person. So in that case, the disciple also wouldn't have to figure out, is this person bona fide? He's been ordered by someone he accepts as an authority. So, but for the discussion now in 2014, in December of 2014, the situation is that anyone who's looking to take initiation in ISKCON knows that either there are gurus who have been, it's hard to say this, because the GBC doesn't want to say authorized. They want to say that these people that have been, there's been no objection to them initiating, which doesn't mean they're perfect or pure and can't make mistakes, but it means that they're good devotees, and the GBC sees no reason that they shouldn't initiate. But in either case, however you word it, you pick from one of those, or you choose someone who will then go through that process. So that means, for now within ISKCON, determining if this is a bona fide spiritual master is not entirely done by you. Now, the GBC may say he is. You may feel he isn't. But as I said before, that's not really what you have to be looking for. And in a sense, it's ironic, but it would even be offensive to think that way if a person is in good standing, if one is acting as guru, or one is a siksha guru to many in good standing, for you to assume that they're not bona fide could be offensive, or could be borderline offensive. So then what are you looking for? There's several places in our scripture, and I've mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again. And it's also worth mentioning because some of you may want in the future to accept someone as a siksha guru, even though you have a diksha guru. That may be possible, and that does happen for different reasons. And so, in different places in which the instruction is given, the general instruction which is given is that the disciple should live with a spiritual master for a year. And that way the disciple can check out the spiritual master, and also the spiritual master can check out the disciple. So that's the injunction of scripture. That don't take it, that's the traditional injunction. Don't take initiation for 1 year, but check the spiritual master. Live with him, see. And what are you looking for? Well, as we said, As we said, one thing you're looking for is if he's bona fide, which is not really the issue now in ISKCON. So what are you looking for? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said you're looking for compatibility, which is an interesting concept, because that's what you look for in a marriage. So Prabhupada says that traditionally charts were done to see if there was compatibility, and the compatibility in marriage, there are many factors that created compatibility, but they wanted to make sure there were enough factors that the match would be happy, because if there was incompatibility, Prabhupada said, then they won't be happy. So it wouldn't work well. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses the word compatibility, which is, you know, if we understand the word compatibility, then we would say, is it a good match? Now, I don't know if a lot of disciples think that way. But in any case, that's the word he uses. Does this person, you know, I mean, compatibility can mean many things. Does this person understand me? Do I understand him? Do we have, do I kind of think like this person? Do I relate well? Is a good match in terms of service? And a lot of times compatibility is not always an intellectual process. It's a working process. Do we work well together? Does he understand me? Do I understand him? Like we say, are we on the same wavelength? Things of that nature. And of course, another factor which is important is one must have faith in that person. So that, but in the shastras that I've read, although generally it's understood that to accept a guru there must be faith, I don't remember that being discussed so much. But of course, living with the guru means to see if faith develops. But compatibility is an interesting phenomenon. Anyway, I don't know why we got off on that tangent, but I just wanted to make that point. I was making the point that there's what is considered a psychological, I guess the word is illness, or what would be the word, weakness, is that one becomes addicted to guidance, that one can't make decisions themselves. And the point I was making, yes, I remember the point I was making, is that what would be often considered a weakness or a problem in an ordinary relationship, because guru-disciple relationship is a relationship, can also become a problem in a guru-disciple relationship. And sometimes it's not a problem for the guru as much as it would be a problem for the disciple. And this is an example, and we've found this to be an example. And it's a good example, because what I'm saying, when I'm saying it's a problem, some people might say, why is it a problem? Because aren't you supposed to be dependent on the spiritual master? And aren't you supposed to, you know, not think you're smart and take guidance and so forth? And of course the answer is yes. But I'll give you an example. There's a letter, and you can find it on the Vedabase, in which devotee was asking many, many, many questions about Tulsi, how to take care of Tulsi, because we didn't know in the early days. And I think she also was asking some questions, some other questions. And a lot of these questions were really common sense. And this plays into my point last Saturday, that sometimes when you take your Krishna consciousness, I've seen this. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I think we were either speaking about this last week or speaking about something that relates to this or it's close to this. That sometimes when you take the Krishna consciousness, you get thrown off a little bit because everything is so new and so different. So you have your life, you have You have the way you look at the world and what you understand. You have your values and so forth. And then there's this new culture you're entering into, and many things are different, and it's a whole body of knowledge about life and about who you are and about God that you're learning, and you're not familiar with all of it. And so sometimes you begin to doubt your own understanding. Yeah, last week we were talking about, I believe we mentioned something about gut instinct. And sometimes you don't trust your own gut instincts anymore. Or sometimes it appears that your common sense doesn't function in every situation because you're not certain if your common sense is aligned with Krishna consciousness. Because you're thinking, well, maybe in Krishna consciousness this isn't right, and what I feel to be right or what my common sense dictates to be right may not be right. And in some cases that may be true, but generally common sense is universal. And so in this letter, this devotee was asking many, many questions to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was a little, I guess, fed up with why is she asking all these questions, because she should be able to answer them. These are common sense. And Prabhupada said something like, he just stopped answering, or in one question, he said something, if he gave an answer, and he said, if you don't understand, or he may have said, and for these other questions, if you don't understand, ask somebody who has common sense. Something like that. In other words, he's saying, these are common sense questions, and you don't need to ask your spiritual master. You know, Guru Maharaj, should I eat chapatis, or is it better? Should we cook them on the fire, or is it okay we cook them in the pan? Should they be light brown, medium brown, or if we get dark, if it's dark brown, is it not bona fide? You know, should we water at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock? You know, the questions that you don't need to ask your spiritual master. So this just makes my point that I believe, because I've seen it and I've experienced it, that sometimes a devotee can become so, what's the word? So dependent on instructions because they're afraid they're going to make a wrong decision, or they're afraid they don't understand enough about Krishna consciousness, and that probably comes from a psychological weakness that they're very dependent, or of course they could just be extremely cautious, or it could be that they're very kind of a black and white person, rule and regulation oriented person, so they always want to do everything exactly by the book, perfectly, so they're afraid maybe the spots on the chapatis, if they're too dark, you know, darker than a light brown, then there's trouble there, Krishna won't like it, or you know, maybe he won't accept it, maybe if the spots are too brown then my initiation will be invalidated because Krishna won't like this, you know. Now you think, okay, that's exaggeration. Okay, it is exaggeration, but I can guarantee you there are some people that think like that. And so you come to Krishna consciousness and it can create this like paranoia that, you know, I'm doing everything wrong and my guru doesn't like me and, you know, I wrote him a letter and he hasn't written back in 3 days, and you know, and I found out that my other god sister got a letter but she wrote it after me, that means he doesn't like me. You see, these are all our own psychological problems. And because we have that nature, those problems would come up in any relationship we had. And so it just becomes unfortunate, number one, that we have those problems, or number two, if we have them and we don't control them, then they come up in the guru-disciple relationship. But this over-dependency on, you know, you could even say this addiction to being guided, where one cannot make their own decisions, is not the way Prabhupada trained us, and it's not the way he wanted us to be. But it's easy for some of us to become that way. Now, he didn't want us to be entirely the other way, where we wouldn't take into consideration, obviously, what Shastra says or what he says. But Prabhupada used a word, you may have heard this before. Prabhupada used a word, it was in a letter, and he said, I want my disciples to be independently thoughtful. So independently thoughtful means that you're given a set of instructions, you're given a body of knowledge, and then based on your understanding of that knowledge, you make decisions. That's what Prabhupada meant. So it didn't mean that you're not making decisions which are based on logic or based on shastra, based on instructions that Prabhupada has given. It didn't mean that. But independently thoughtful means, here's information. Now you use that information and make decisions. Now, obviously in some cases there may be philosophical points or practical details which we are not Krishna conscious enough or experienced enough to know the answer. And so, of course, you ask your spiritual master. Or you come to a conclusion and you want confirmation. Say, Guru Maharaj, this is the conclusion I've come to, and it's a big decision, and I just want to make sure that this is the right decision. So that's fine. And that, I think that's, you know, just normal. You want to make sure your spiritual master is pleased, or you want to make sure you're making the right decision. So there's a balance. I don't mean to say you don't ask your spiritual master, but it's what Prabhupada is showing in this independently thoughtful and in this other letter, use your common sense. Actually, Prabhupada said, want our devotees to be trained to be independently thoughtful. So that means that you have enough knowledge that you can make proper decisions. Because otherwise, how can Krishna consciousness go on? And how can you go on in your life if you understand my point? I think it's clear, and you know, I think this is what we were saying last time, that Krishna consciousness can make you like lose self-confidence because you feel like you don't understand it well enough to make common sense decisions. And I think a lot of times what happens is that a person may have had no problem making common sense decisions, and then they come into Krishna consciousness and then they feel handicapped because they feel like very, very concerned or paranoid or fearful that maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. And yeah, I believe last week that's what we had talked about. You know, we had spoken about going with your gut feeling and not being afraid to listen to one's gut feeling and not being afraid to act in common sense. Use your common sense, even if you're not sure. Well, this seems to be the right thing, so let's do it. And the point I made, which is probably the most important, is that you always, whenever you act, if perhaps you have a doubt that this is actually common sense or this gut feeling is really Krishna conscious or whatever, but you want to go with it because it seems to be the right thing, you always are humble enough to recognize that maybe the decision is not going to be correct or not 100% correct, and you always want to monitor it. So you're self-reflective. So that way you can take a bold step. At the same time, you can be aware that perhaps it could be a mistake. Let me monitor it. I'm not thinking just because it's a gut instinct or I feel this is common sense, it must be 100% right. Generally, we'll act that way. But we'll always look at it. And because it's true, we don't know everything in Krishna consciousness, and we may later find out actually that decision was wrong because I didn't know enough. But particularly, I think something that's really kind of the crux of this is that a lot of these decisions actually don't have anything to do with Krishna consciousness. They're just decisions based on manipulating material energy, and they're the same decisions non-devotees make. And it becomes unfortunate if we become confused about those things. Now, of course, you could say, well, but because we're in Krishna consciousness, there's always a Krishna conscious consideration. But sometimes there isn't. It's just, you're just interacting with material nature, you know. You stop at a red light, you go to green light, whether you're a devotee or non-devotee. And it would be kind of foolish to think, well, now I'm a devotee, do I really have to stop the green light? And you think, yeah, nobody would think that way. No, they didn't. Devotees in the early days of the movement sometimes didn't stop at red lights because they thought that this is just the material world. So why should I stop at a red light? Yes, they did think that way. So that's a good example how coming into Krishna consciousness and misunderstanding the philosophy causes people to do things that are kind of common sense you don't do, right? I mean, what non-devotee would think you don't stop at a red light because why should you? It's just a red light. I mean, you're a free spirit. Why do you need to stop at a red light? So I think you understand how when you put spiritual philosophy in there, it could make people lose common sense. Yeah, okay. Devotees used to go into like botanical gardens and steal all the flowers. Why? Because it's right there in Shastra that everything belongs to Krishna. So why not take everything? Or, you know, go to people's homes. A person, this is a true story, a person, you know, cultivated a very beautiful garden, flower garden, and the devotees one night stole all the flowers, or one morning, and he came out and he had no flowers. It's like, whoa. So Prabhu, they all belong to Krishna, and he got the benefit of devotional service. Okay, philosophically, that's true. But when Prabhupada found out about that, did Prabhupada say, well, that was good because everything belongs to Krishna? Prabhupada said, no. Krishna gives everyone their quota, and this was this person's quota, and you can't take it without asking them, because that's stealing. So devotees didn't understand that everything belongs to Krishna means that Krishna gives everyone a quota to take care of. So even though it belongs to Krishna, it's this person's quota, which Krishna has given them. Otherwise, hey, go steal his wife. You know, put a sari on her. And, you know, bring her in the Brahmacharini ashram. Why not? She belongs to Krishna. I mean, didn't Prabhupada say, every woman is Krishna's wife and you're stealing? So, you know, just go kidnap women because their husbands have stolen them. Now you're thinking, you're all waiting, say, Mahatma Prabhu, did someone actually do that? I'm happy to inform you that no one's done that. Now, I think it's kind of obvious that you shouldn't do that, but stealing flowers is really, it's the same principle, belongs to Krishna. So we understand that you can lose common sense by not understanding the applications of philosophy. So we have to be careful. And if we have to be careful to not come to conclusions based on philosophy that would be considered by an ordinary person to be ridiculous. And it happens. And it's still happening today in the Hare Krishna movement. And it becomes dangerous when you have that kind of thinking and then you apply it into a relationship with your spiritual master. One of the things that happens, and it makes it difficult for a devotee, is that, as we're saying, then someone becomes even I've seen this when a woman becomes married, that she's thinking, if I get married, it will solve all my problems because my husband will just tell me what to do, and he'll do everything for me. And although they're probably not thinking of this consciously, I've seen women think that if I just get married, and actually they are thinking of this consciously, if I just get married, I'll be Krishna conscious. I won't have to do anything. It'll just happen. Because I'll have a husband there, and he's Krishna conscious, and he'll just guide me. And I kind of, you know, I won't have to struggle anymore. I won't have to. I don't know exactly what women are thinking in detail, but I've seen many, many women thinking like this. If I just get married, I'll become Krishna conscious, which may be true, but I think they're thinking they don't have to do anything. Not that I think they're thinking, I know that thinking. I'll get married, and it's like my husband does everything, and I just sit in the back seat, and he drives the car, and we get there. And so disciples also think that way. Well, if I just get initiated, then it's kind of like I just sit in the back seat, and then my guru does everything, and I don't really have to think. You know, I mean, if you're sitting in the back seat of a car, if you're not driving, you don't have to think about driving. You don't have to think about directions. So I've seen this thinking, and That's not the right way to think. Actually, that's not a way to think. That's no thinking. That he'll think for me. Here's my guru will just think everything for me. And that's, again, that's not the way Prabhupada trained us. But my point is that I've seen women get married with this thinking, and that means that it's likely when they take a guru, they're thinking that way also. That, you know, if I just have his darshan, his association, he'll do everything for me and I won't have to do anything. And so we should never think that way. Because if we think that, you know, as Prabhupada said, you know, really, if you really look at, well, what is the function of a guru? The guru gives you guidance, gives you knowledge by which you can take and apply and act. So you're not just sitting in the back seat and he's doing everything. He's just pushing you by his glance, by his smile. You could even say pushing you by his words. But I think we've spoken about this, but a lot of times what you'll find, if a disciple has kind of this backseat mentality, then the words of the spiritual master will push them, but they won't push them for long, because they'll always become dependent. Which I said, in some senses, I'm not saying be entirely independent, and I'm not saying being dependent is not healthy. It is healthy to a degree. But I've seen that some people, you know, it's like they can only function when they're always, 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 always getting these instructions. They have to always get personal instructions from their guru, or they can't function. So that's not healthy. Of course, the words of the guru are our life and soul. We live off them. But Prabhupada's idea was, okay, here's the instruction you've been given them, now take it to heart. That's the point. Like Prabhupada says, when he read the instructions of Vishwanath Chakravarti in the Gita, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that the instructions of the guru are the disciple's life and soul. So Prabhupada said that was what really caused him to take up the mission to come to the West. That was the real catalyst there. Because he realized, okay, he had this instruction and he was meant to take it to heart. And so as you know, Prabhupada got the instruction, I think, in 1923, and he went to America in 1965. So we're looking at 42 years later. So 42 years after he got the instruction, it was still vibrant in his heart. And for many of us, you know, you get an instruction from your guru, and then it lasts for a little while. And if you don't get that instruction again, for many of us, we just drop the instruction. I think it's human psychology that if something is not current, we tend to think it's not current. It's old now. It's collecting dust. It's not relevant. That's not true. That's why, like, when there's a class in a temple, so-and-so Maharaj is here, he's giving class. You naturally want to hear the class because it's present tense, it's today, it seems relevant, as opposed to saying, well, I'm not going to go to class, I'll listen to a class that was given 3 years ago. There's something about the present that seems so important. But as we know, so many of the instructions, if not all of the most of the instructions of the spiritual master are eternal, so they're not contextual. They're transcendental. They have nothing to do with today, what's going on in the world today, per se. They're not. They may have something to do with what's going on in the world today, but they were spoken 30 years ago. So I'm saying it's not that it was spoken just for that day. Letters and personal instructions that Prabhupada gave, maybe. But you understand my point, that sometimes we get an instruction, and if we're not in the right consciousness, the instruction will inspire us for a few days or a few weeks, and then we'll tend to forget it. Whereas Prabhupada shows by example that he didn't forget it. 42 years later, that instruction was still vibrant, alive, and pushing him. So I think it's interesting to note that, and I'm sure if you spoke to many spiritual masters, they could give you a list of what they may consider unhealthy aspects of a guru-disciple relationship. And I think we would find that many of those unhealthy aspects are probably the kinds of things that that individual also has with other people, which is very interesting, right? Because normally you wouldn't think that way. You'd think, you know, guru-disciple relationship is based totally on one's purity and so forth, but it can be based on, it can be based on one's psychology not being healthy or being healthy that could help the relationship or harm it. So the purpose of this talk is as you know, we always talk about balance. So where's the balance? So the balance is, on one hand, the balance is you're overly dependent on instruction. You can't make up your mind practically about anything. The other side of the equation would be you don't listen. You just make all your own decisions. You don't think you need to listen, or your guru doesn't always understand. So why bother? You know, you have Prabhupada's books, and you know, you don't really need guidance from anybody else. So there are people like that, and that's the opposite end, and that's not healthy either. There are people, maybe you know them, maybe you're like this yourself, who it's really difficult for them to take instruction. They don't listen to anybody. Just, you know, they're so independently minded that it's not healthy. So Prabhupada's saying be independently thoughtful, but he's not saying be independently thoughtful outside of his instructions. Like why do I need anything, any instruction? I can just figure everything out myself. That's also a problem. So you understand there's got to be a balance for it to be healthy. And as we spoke last week, and I think it's worth stating again, that common sense is common sense, whether you're Krishna conscious or not. And so we can make a lot of very good decisions in our life, even decisions that relate to our service, even decisions that relate to philosophy, if we use common sense. Because a lot of times, philosophy exists in a vacuum, and you have to apply it. And you require common sense to apply it. And if you come to Krishna consciousness and somehow you allow yourself to not use common sense, then when trying to apply philosophy, you may not be able to apply it well. And then, as I said, you may end up stealing people's flowers, driving through red lights. What else do we do? You want to actually hear? Okay, I think this is good. Let's talk a little bit more about certain things that maybe have been misunderstood. There were times within our movement in which some groups of devotees thought that stealing not just flowers but groceries and gasoline and things like that was good because you didn't have to pay for them, and that's Krishna's money that which you could save. So they just stole it. Now you might say, Prabhu, you know, in the Sri Sampradaya they were trying to collect money to build a temple and nobody was giving, so they just stole the money. Isn't it bona fide? It's actually a true story. I don't know if you know that. There are many, many devotees joined the Sri Sampradaya, I believe in the time of Ramanujacharya, and they were thieves, and one of the thieves joined, so he made all his thief friends devotees. And so they were collecting for the temple, going to all these wealthy people, and no one was giving. And so they said, well, we have to build the temple, so let's just steal, because we know how to steal. So that happened a lot in ISKCON. Never authorized by Prabhupada, never, when he found out, always upset that we would do such things. So the point is, in principle, everything belongs to Krishna. So in one sense, philosophically, you could validate doing those things. But common sense and common decency and morality and so forth dictate that you wouldn't do those things. So we find that, and this sounds so, in a sense it sounds so, like why would we have to even talk about this? Doesn't it sound like This is kind of like, is this class meant for 5-year-olds? You know, this is what you would, you know, in a sense, speak to 5-year-olds. But the point is that we have to talk about it, and that just, it makes the point that we have to understand practical application of philosophy in a mature way, as mature adults, because these stories I'm telling you were done by devotees who were very young, had immature understandings of Krishna consciousness. Lots of divorce was going on in our movement in the early days. And one of the reasons it was going on is because men wanted to take sannyas, and the men were 20 years old, 22. It's not normally when you leave a family. Most of those men had little children. And they're writing letters to Prabhupada saying, I want to leave my 1-year-old son and take sannyas. And you're sitting there thinking, how could anyone in their right mind write a letter that way? Well, I can tell you, because I wrote one of them, and I was not in my right mind. I was in my left mind. Because you read in the philosophy that household life is a deep, dark well once going in. Very difficult to get out. You read about the glories of celibacy. You read about the glories of renunciation. You see the sannyasis preaching, they have no other responsibility. You're a grihastha, you have so many responsibilities that minimize the time you can spend doing direct service, etc., etc., etc. So you add up the equation, 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 of philosophy equals 6. So you come up with 6. Of course, in school, you learned it was 5, but somehow you become a Hare Krishna and you come up with 6. So therefore, so many men wanted to take sannyas. And yes, it's there in the philosophy. But common sense dictates that when you've been married 2 years and you have a 1-year-old child, you don't take sannyas. Right? That's common sense. Yeah. So what we saw happening was that the philosophy took away our common sense. I mean, you're sitting there thinking, Mahatma Prabhu, how could you write a letter to Prabhupada asking him to take sannyas when you had a 1-year-old son? Because I read everything in the Shastra. And according to me, it sounded like I was in the deep, dark well. And Shastra says, sooner you get out of that deep, dark well, the better. So I wanted out fast before I... What? Took another birth as a woman? Oh my God. Take birth as a woman? What could be worse than that? You're thinking, oh, he's joking. No, that's how we were thinking. So, I think that makes point even more clear, because you're all sitting there thinking, oh my God, did you actually think that way? Ladies and gentlemen, there are devotees today in the Hare Krishna movement who are still thinking like this. Because they're allowing philosophical points to cover their own common sense. Or they themselves are not well-grounded people. And then a person who's not well-grounded comes in touch with the philosophy. And it can make them a little weird. And I'm sure you've all seen this. You know, let's say you have a tendency to be you're a very black and white person. You're a very black and white person, and you come to Krishna consciousness, you can easily become a very fanatical person and very one-sided and unbalanced person. You can only see things one way. And you all, I'm sure, have seen that, haven't you? A person is very narrow. They can't understand things in a broad way. And so the philosophy gives you so many things to see in a particular way. And if you're a fanatical person, you'll only tend to see them in a particular way, left either very liberal way or very conservative way, if that's your nature. So it's obvious that our nature does affect how we see Krishna consciousness. Anyway, I don't know if we talked about that all last week. All of this can affect relationship with the guru, then, you know, if you have this mentality or nature, not mentality, that, you know, I become initiated and then, boom, automatically everything happens. If you have that nature, then that means you have expectations within that relationship that are probably not going to be met, and you're going to be let down. Now, I want to tell you something. This sounds funny, but it's not meant to be funny. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about initiation. And he said, when you become initiated, you become, how did he say it? You get official entrance in, you become a, something like you become officially, he didn't use these words, but you could be officially anointed as a neophyte. And to you, it sounds like, what, was that a joke? Because if a god brother, god sister got initiated and you said, congratulations, Prabhu, today you've become a neophyte. You'd think that's a joke. He wasn't making a joke. He was saying that it's like, his point was like, it's like entering the university. When you enter the university, you officially now become a freshman. That's what he meant. You've entered the university. Now you're a freshman. So, when you become a devotee and you become initiated, it's not like, okay, now I've become initiated, so sit back and relax, and my guru's the pilot, and the plane's going back to Godhead, and I just put my headphones on and take a little nap, and everything's good, right? It's not like that. Yeah, it's not like that. And so Bhaktisiddhanta went on to say, very important point, very interesting lecture. So he's hitting two really important points, two misconceptions. The first misconception is that initiation is a milestone. It's actually just, it is a milestone, only in the sense that you got into the university. But now the university, it's just the beginning. You're like, you're nowhere yet. Okay, you got in the university, but you don't have a degree. You don't have anything yet. You just got there. Okay. So he's making the point that now you're a freshman. So now what? And so then he goes on to say that now that you're initiated, there's no guarantee you won't fall into Maya. So he's dealing with misconceptions. And where are these misconceptions coming from? Well, you could say, in a sense, they're coming from people's own psychology. Maybe your father or mother did everything for you, you know. So then you think, you know, well, I have a new father, my guru. He'll do everything for me. In a sense, it's true. Your guru will do everything for you up to a certain point, but you have to participate. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says something very nice. So he says, when you get initiated, you're now a neophyte. So obviously, neophyte doesn't mean anything, really, other than you're in the university and now you can learn and you can practice. So he says that being initiated does not guarantee you won't fall back into where you came from before you were initiated. He says if you don't do the work, you're not going to go forward. He said it's better to be initiated than not initiated, but if you don't do the work, it's not going to happen. So it was another misconception, right? You know, my guru will do everything. So he's making two very important points. And it kind of clarifies expectations that a disciple should have. So if a person is overly dependent on another's mercy, which Prabhupada said is not healthy to be overly dependent. You know, you think, oh Gurudev, I'm completely dependent on your mercy. And now in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says to be overly dependent on another's mercy is not good. So we should be completely dependent on our Guru's mercy, but not overly dependent. You understand, right? So now if I'm thinking that initiation is a milestone, everything's, you know, downhill from here because I'm initiated, I can sit back and relax, then that means we have the wrong expectations because of our psychological nature. And then if you have the wrong expectations, your guru cannot fulfill those expectations, then you might feel that he let you down. When actually what the guru was doing was giving you guidance so that you could your intelligence would become clear enough that you could execute Krishna consciousness, or he's giving you intelligence how to practically apply Krishna consciousness. So the expectation is not that the guru will do everything. He'll just smile upon you, and then your japa will automatically be good. That may happen sometimes, but that's not standard process. Of course, sadhu sangha, you know, by association of devotee, we become inspired. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but that's not the standard. So then we find there's a initiation is opportunity. Yes. So if a person takes initiation with a expectation which is not realistic, or it's not part of the guru-disciple paradigm, then obviously they'll be let down, and if they're let down, sometimes they may give up their guru or give up Krishna consciousness. Now at the same time, having a guru means to be controlled by them. But it's a balance, as I was saying, because Prabhupada would give us so many instructions. Then he would say, okay, now go out and spread Krishna consciousness. Now you have the instructions, like now you have to fight a battle. You've been trained. Now go out and fight it. You don't ask anymore, is it okay to shoot here or there? You've been trained, so you make those decisions. So I fear, or I'm concerned, that if we allow ourselves to be dependent in an unhealthy way, then we're going to be let down by our guru, because we'll kind of have this expectation that I'm a little messed up, but my guru will like cure me of every like emotional, psychological problem I ever had since the age of 9 years old. No, it's not like that. That's not his service. But it's a service of the disciple to approach the spiritual master properly, to create a healthy relationship upon which the disciple is very free to use his or her intelligence to make proper decision. And even sometimes question the guru, well, you said to do this, but it seems like we should do that. Disciples always approach the guru in a humble way, but it doesn't mean if the guru says to do something, like for example, there was a time when there was a lot of cult issues were in the media, cult suicides, cult this and that. So sometimes we would be interviewed, or people would ask us, if your spiritual master asked you to commit suicide, would you do it? Because there was so much concern that these people had become so dependent on their guru that they killed themselves. You know, I don't know if you're aware, there's a mass suicide, and this whole cult, everyone killed themselves on the order of their guru. So how would you answer that question? If your guru asked you to kill yourself, would you? Well, in Shastra it says it's sinful to kill yourself. So number one, your guru wouldn't ask you to do anything which is sinful. Number two, our Shastra says that if your guru does ask you to do something sinful, you have to reject him. So you see, we're not a cult, because there is direction in our scriptures or from acharyas that you can reject a guru. So if there are times in which you can reject a guru or reject his instruction because he's gone off, that means obviously you have to be using your intelligence. Right? I'll get to that. Can you just type the question out, Guru Nishtha, what that question is? You understand the point? I mean, in Shastra, there is this question comes up. It's written. It's in, you know, Bali Maharaj rejected his guru, Sukracharya. And in there's other commentaries or other books. in which the question comes up when and if you can reject a guru. And so it gives some stipulation that if the guru was never a Vaishnava when he initiated you, you could reject him. And if the guru has helplessly fallen, he's fallen into sinful activity and he can't recover, you can reject him. And if he rejects Krishna or he becomes a Vaishnava aparadi, he offends Vaishnavas, tells you not to surrender to Krishna. In those cases, you can reject him. So I think that's clear, that it indicates that as a disciple, you're totally dependent on your guru, but still if your guru says something wrong or does something wrong, you have to question that. You know, Guru Maharaj, you said this, but in Prabhupada's books he says this. I don't understand. And then if your guru comes to the point and is saying, you don't have to surrender to Krishna. You just surrender to the Brahman. You know, something, you hear that and say, okay. Then you have to freeze the relationship. You have to go on disciple probation. You have to put your guru on probation and say, all right, I'll pray for you that you come to your senses. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others say that if he doesn't come to his senses, that you have to reject him, otherwise you'll become contaminated. So isn't that interesting? Isn't it? Okay. I find it quite interesting, I think it just is like icing on the cake of this discussion, that you always have to use discrimination. You know, what if your guru asked you to do something that's against the principles of Krishna consciousness? You wouldn't do it. And your guru said, Venerati, you know, you look unhealthy, you should have chicken soup will cure you. Jai Gurudev! No. So I can't eat chicken soup, it's against my vows. No, chicken soup will be good for you. But Gurudev, we're not supposed to eat. No, I'm ordering you to take... No. We would hope that no one would be in that situation. But you understand the point. Now, there's a conversation, it's funny. I don't remember verbatim. But the devotees were walking and there was a big building. And they said, Prabhupada, someday we'll get a big building. Everyone's jai, or Prabhupada said. I think maybe it's Prabhupada said, someday we'll get a big building, jai. You know, and they'd see it like a big van. You know, devotees didn't have much then. And they'd see it like a big van or bus. Prabhupada, someday we'll get a big bus. And then see something else. You know, they're in the park. And someday we'll have a property like this. Jai, Prabhupada. Then they saw a big dog and Prabhupada. I said, and someday we'll have a big dog like that. And everyone went, Jai Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, why do you want a dog? And he was like spun it around. Like, we don't want a dog. We don't need a dog. So Prabhupada was playing with them. You see? He was playing with them by saying something that isn't Krishna conscious. And just seeing what they would say. So, I don't know of him doing that again, but it was funny. But anyway, the point is clear that our Shastra says that even though you have a guru, don't give up your common sense. So, now, another unfortunate scene we have seen in our Hare Krishna movement, and you're thinking, well, if my guru tells me to eat meat, obviously I wouldn't do that. Okay, but it's not so obvious. And let's look at reality here. Sai Baba, many of you may know that Sai Baba is a very, very famous guru. And very extremely popular, and people say that he's an incarnation of God and he has mystic power. Now, some people don't believe that. And some people say that he's a good magician. And as a good magician, he's been able to do things which look like he has mystic power to manifest things. And people have analyzed it, and magicians have analyzed it. So there appears to be some evidence. You know, what do they say? Wherever there's a rumor, there must be some truth. So it appears to be, you know, and there's enough people that explain how he's doing it and show you in videos how he's doing it. to create some doubt that this is actually mystic power, because you can actually see things, you know, as magicians do, coming out of the sleeve and holding things like this. And anyway, and there was evidence that he's had sexual relationships with children, which is, of course, about as low as it gets. But in spite of evidence, well, I guess everyone didn't believe the evidence, but generally, you know, Atmananda, we don't have rumors about you with children. Prem Kishore, we don't have rumors about you with children. Why don't we have rumors about you? Because that's not what you do. Why do we have rumors about somebody? Why would you have them? Why? Because they must be hanging out with children in private places. And some of those children must be testifying that he actually did something. And there are. And so even in spite of that, people still accept him, not just as guru, but as God. Which is, to us, it's just amazing that people could do that. Isn't it? Just like, because they become so blinded by seeing him as God that they can't imagine that he would be cheating them. It's easy to understand, isn't it? No, Sai Baba's God, so he couldn't be doing magic just to trick us to get our faith. And if he had any relation with these little boys, it was only to bless them in some way. That they're so fortunate that, you know, they could be alone with him. You know, who knows how they're thinking, right? Now, take this situation to ISKCON. The same thing happened to an ISKCON guru. And that guru was expelled from ISKCON. And it was known knowledge that he did that, I think more than once. And he still has followers. And he deviated in so many ways. So many ways. He created actually a new philosophy. He created a new order of Krishna consciousness that was basically a copy of like a Franciscan order, and the way they did their sadhana and the way they dressed. It just created something that Prabhupada never created. And people stayed with him, even to the point when practically everyone left him, because it was obvious that he had done, and it was obvious how he had deviated, what he had done with the young boys. And still people stayed with him till the very end. And you're sitting there thinking, is there another moment aside from ISKCON I could join where this doesn't happen? No, it happens in ISKCON. Love it, or, you know, with all thy faults, ISKCON, I love you. Yeah, so this happened, and so you're asking, but these are devotees. Devotees are intelligent people. Yes, but this is what happens when you don't allow yourself to just, when you get so bewildered by, oh, my guru is this, my guru is that, and you can't even use common sense anymore to see that your guru just fell down with a young boy. He's not, you know, eating lunch with Radha and Krishna. He's doing this with young boys. You know, it's time to get out of here and take shelter of someone who's not doing that, who with your own eyes you can see is not doing that. This is this kind of reality that these things have happened. So we have to have proper expectations for our relationship with our guru, what our guru is, what he isn't, for what he does for us, what we do for ourselves, how we do it for ourselves because of what he gives for us, how to be completely dependent on your guru and at the same time be independently thoughtful, and how to develop relationships which are healthy and normal, so you don't come to the point when your guru says, well, what do you think we should do? And you go, I don't know, Guru Maharaj. I have no idea. No, we don't want you to be that way. We want to say, well, what do you think? Tell me. You have a mind, you have intelligence, you have life experience. You've heard Prabhupada, you've heard me, you've heard others. What do you think we should do? So, okay, it's a nice sentiment. Say, well, whatever you think I should do. But if your guru is asking you, what do you think we should do? He's not asking you He's asking you, what do you think? He's not asking you to say whatever you think. He said, no, I want to know what you think. Right? So, you know, don't be afraid. I guess you could title this lecture, Don't Be Afraid to Think. If the newspaper gets a hold of this title of this lecture, they're going to go, yeah, it's true. Hare Krishnas are a cult. Look at this. They have to give them a lecture called Don't Be Afraid to Think. That means they've been brainwashed. They can't think. And it's ironic that we would come to a point where we'd say, well, I can't think. I don't know. When Prabhupada's saying, in a letter to his leaders, I want our devotees to be trained to be independently thoughtful. Yes? So, okay, here's the question from Santosh. I, being a neophyte, often when I fall in Krishna consciousness, I lose enthusiasm easily. What is dissolution? For example, sometimes I become lazy to cook 10 Mangal Artik, inattentive chanting. This is my question. Yeah. Maybe we'll get to the question, Santosh. But it doesn't relate to what we're talking about, so I want to stay on topic, and then if there's time, we'll answer the question. But the answer is easy. I'm going to let you think about the answer, because I just said the answer is easy. And Nike has given you the answer. If you're familiar with Nike, maybe you know the answer. And if you don't know the answer, can somebody type in the answer that Nike gave? There's three words, yeah. The answer to your question was given by Nike. Can someone type in the answer for Santosh? And then if there's time, I'll get more into it. So I want to stay with the discussion at hand. I don't want to say we're not dependent on the Guru's mercy. The mercy comes from the Guru's instruction. We are totally dependent on the mercy of the Guru. But don't ever interpret that to be in a way that you misunderstand. Yeah, Jagopal. The answer to your question, Santosh, is when I lose enthusiasm, when I become lazy to cook, to go to Mangal Artik, to chant attentively, etc., what do? You just do it. Yeah, that's the answer. Santosh, you may not always feel like it. What do you do when you don't feel like it? You just do it anyway. There's no other answer. That's called Vaidhi Sadhana. Vaidhi Sadhana means you do it, whether you like it or not. And you have to have the strength enough to do it. Okay, I can relate this question to the topic. Now, if, for example, we're talking about a person or a kind of mentality you might have or a weakness you may have, and this weakness may not be something you brought to Krishna consciousness. It may develop due to misunderstanding of the philosophy. You have a weakness in which you need other people to tell you what to do. I don't know what to do. What do I do now? You see? Then if you develop that kind of weakness, then although the answer to this question is so simple, you won't see it. And that's why Prabhupada said, it's so simple, you can miss it. And Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness is 90% common sense. So that's really interesting. In light of this discussion, Krishna consciousness is 90% common sense. So Santosh, if you actually look at the answer we gave you, that's not really from Shastra. It's common sense, isn't it? But it's Prabhupada's answer. It's an answer that he gave when someone had difficulty. Just do it, basically, is what he said. And that answer is not an answer really from Shastra. It's common sense. Isn't it? I don't feel like my homework, your parents say. Just do it. Stop procrastinating. Just do it. It's common sense. If you procrastinate, you won't do it. You'll stay up late. And then you say, I'll do it in the morning. Then you don't get up early. And then you forgot. You have other things to do in the morning. And you don't have time. So Krishna consciousness is 90% common sense. And so if it's 90% common sense, we want to make sure our common sense is working. And so many of the answers to our questions are really common sense. Okay. Here's a long comment or question. I had to understand with experience that you know with my Diksha Gurudev. I had to understand with the experience of my Diksha Guru that I can't be as dependent on Guru because I was very dependent on him for too much time. I had to learn to serve him his instructions and not just the personal relationship. I was very near to him for a couple of years, and when I had to serve him without being near and not be able to travel with him, I almost died because I was very attached to serving him personally and traveling with him, etc. So now I've changed very much, and now I'm trying to follow my Gurudev's instructions. Yes, but also I feel that I need to take my self-decisions, and even sometimes I tell my husband that I don't want to consult absolutely all my gurus, and you don't have to, because so many of your instructions are not something that a guru... Yeah, I'm going to make a comment on your statement here. So Venerati is saying that, you know, before she was, you know, she always wanted to be near her guru, and she felt she needed that, and that was her life and soul. And I think you're saying that also you were always needed that kind of instruction. And now, in order to balance it, sometimes you say, you just want to make a decision, you don't want to ask them. And my comment here is that so many decisions in life, you don't have to ask your guru. It's not necessary. They're decisions which you can make. And that's what Prabhupada meant by being independently thoughtful. So you have, there's a devotee, he asks me a lot of questions. And I sometimes answer his question by saying, tell me what you think the answer is. First, I want to know what you think the answer is, because I want him to realize that a lot of the questions he's asking, he can figure out the answer. But he's addicted to being guided. He can't think for himself. And I saw that in him, and I said, never ask me a question again unless you first also give me what you think the answer is. And so he was asking very common questions. Should I do this or that? Or when this happens, I feel this way. It was a psychological weakness. So they have a name for it. I can't remember the name for it. But it's when you're addicted to being instructed. It's a psychological weakness. And the problem is we can actually create that disease. You know, you may come to Krishna consciousness. You know, you're an independent thinker. And then, you know, you hear about 4,000 classes saying, you know, well, you're just a neophyte, you don't know anything. Top it off, you're a woman, you even know less. And, you know, your senses are out of control and they're bewildering you. And your intelligence doesn't function anymore because all you're thinking about is sex. And then pretty soon you come out, you know, after hearing a few thousand of those classes, you walk around like, Gurudev, is it okay if I tie my shoe now? How tight should I tie it, you know? You know, you think, okay, Mahatma Prabhu is exaggerating. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but not a lot. Right? I think some of you can testify. I'm not exaggerating a lot. It can come to that point, right? So, as disciples, as devotees, we don't want to end up in that situation. And when we take the role of teachers, we don't want to put people in that situation. You don't know anything. Just listen to what I say. Just turn your brain off. Put the off switch on your brain. Listen to what I say. Now, sometimes you might even find Mahatma Prabhu telling somebody that because I see they don't understand something. I say, okay, just stop. Just listen to what I say. It's like this. Because they need to understand what it's like because they don't understand. Okay, we're not saying, we're talking about balance here. But sometimes we do misunderstand something. The guru has to come in and say, no, that's wrong. Okay, I know why you're thinking this way, but you have to consider this point and this point and this point. And they go, oh, I didn't know. Prabhupada said that? Yeah, he said this. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so you didn't have all the information. You made a decision. Okay, we make wrong decisions. Now you've learned. It's a process of growing. Okay, so, yes, I also need to feel that I can take my self-decisions even following instructions, because I think that eventually I must follow my heart. I'm almost 35, and I think, honestly, that I have a little capacity. Be independent. It is fine. The mantra, Venu Rati, and the mantra for all of us is healthy dependency. You know, it's just like you're married. It's not like you want to be independent of Atmananda. But at the same time, you don't want to have to ask him, is it okay to tie your shoes and how tight you should tie them? You know, but like sometimes you might say, Atmananda, do these shoes look good with this sari? And he'll say, yes, they look beautiful. He'll say, no, wear those other shoes. Say, okay. That's just normal life, right? But I think you all can understand what's normal and what's not normal. So there's a healthy, I'm not saying you're independent of your guru, there's a healthy dependency. But if I'm dependent, we're all dependent on Prabhupada and his instructions and guidance, right? But we're dependent in a way in which we try to understand those instructions intelligently and apply them in our life in a way in which we use common sense, we use our intelligence to make decisions. And we go, you know, this seems to be the right thing, let's do it. We're not afraid that if we make a decision, it's not Krishna conscious. Yeah. But some devotees I've seen, they can't make practical decisions. They ask questions about practical decisions, you know, that they shouldn't be asking for. Now, everybody sometimes is confused in certain situations, you know, just like we're in Mauritius. So the big decision in Mauritius is, should we go to this beach or should we go to that beach? So we have to ask the authorities. We go to the Mauritians. What beach do we go to? This one or that one? So that's just normal life, you know. Which one's better? Which one's nicer? Oh, that you should go to that one. Okay, we'll go to that one. No, I'm an independent thinker. I'm not going to let anybody tell me what beach I go to. I'll decide. I'll get on the internet, I'll look at the beaches, and I'll decide. So we're not talking about that. That's not real. That's only real when you have nobody to ask. Okay, we get on the internet, figure it out. There's no one to ask. So, okay, Grunishna, any way we can increase the available spaces in this chat room? Many devotees aren't able to join. They have to chat on Mayapur TV, and then Grunishna, you will bring in their chat. I think you can increase it if you pay. Grunishna, why don't you figure it out? If each individual has to pay, or we can just pay. But anyone who's not in the chat could just go to Mayapur TV and chat there. Santos, thank you. So if anyone has any questions, if you're not registered on Mayapur TV, you'll have to register, and it takes a little while to get approved. But if any of you are on the chat and you don't want to ask a question, then you can go out of the chat, and then someone who wants to ask a question could go in the chat. But right now there's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So there's room for one. One person can join the chat if you... Kamalakshi, Santosh Dastanapalak, if you want to join the chat, you can. There's one space available if you want to ask a question. If you understand what it means to be a disciple, which means to be humble and submissive and always following the order of the guru, you can sometimes question your spiritual master, because the questioning is for service. So sometimes disciples would question Prabhupada, well, you said to do this, but I think we should do that because I think it would be better for the service. And but the point is, they're always ready. Whatever Prabhupada said, they would do. So they weren't challenging him. It wasn't. See, it's all about mentality. You know? So just like I may ask Guru Nishna, say, do this, and she'll say, I think it's better we do it this way, because if we do it this way, we'll get a better result. And I'd say, okay, that's a good idea. So she's not afraid to suggest, because it's in the mood of service. So, you know, it's like I'm walking across the street and I don't see a car coming. So a devotee says, Mahatma Prabhu, there's a car coming, get out of the street. The devotee doesn't think, oh, he's transcendental, he must know what he's doing, you know. Probably the car will just fly over him, or, you know, the car will, by his mystic power, will stop. We don't think that way. We think, no, I better tell him, right? Because that's service. So we don't think, oh, I can't tell my spiritual master anything. No, but if it's in the mood of service, Guru Maharaj, be careful, car's coming. Oh, thank you, I didn't see it. You could even, you know, and you call me and I don't hear. You could run out and grab me and pull me out of the street. Say, well, you just saved my life. You see? So in Prabhupada, when it was in his last days, his disciples had become like his parents, and they were, you know, telling him things. Better you do this, don't do that, don't eat this. And in so many ways, taking care of him. Well, now take your medicine. So because the mood is service, it's okay. That's the point. So that's important to understand, the proper mood. Harish, your question has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about. I don't like answering questions which aren't on topic, because then we get thrown off and we're going in a specific direction. So there is no answer to your question. There's no right or answer. This is the answer is, Prabhupada gave us the Hare Krishna mantra, so he wanted us to chant Hare Krishna, and Radha's name is there. And that's what Prabhupada chanted, so why should we be attached to chanting something that Prabhupada didn't chant? It's a, you know, isn't that, that's a common sense answer, isn't it? Harish was asking why we're chanting Radhe, and why, you know, the GBC said, you know, they didn't say don't chant Radhe, they just said don't chant it a lot. And, you know, if you listen to Prabhupada, you don't find Prabhupada chanting Radhe Radhe, so that's a pretty good reason not to chant it. Right? So the GBC said, you know, just don't chant it much. It's not an example Prabhupada said, and her name is in the Mahamantra. Simple. Nothing complicated. All right. Okay. So to depend on Guru is not necessarily the same as surrender. Well, this is an interesting question. Harish, you're forgiven.
Yes.
It's not wrong that you ask the question. You could ask the question in an email. That's fine. But just, I want to keep the questions on. You know, if anyone has any of the questions that aren't on the topic, just send me an email. We can answer. Bellin says, is to depend on Guru not necessarily the same as surrender to him? That is an interesting question, in the sense, because each disciple may define depending and surrendering in their own way. No, we surrender to Guru and we depend on Guru. But the point is, dependency can be healthy and dependency can be unhealthy. Dependency can strengthen you and dependency can weaken you. So we're all dependent on Guru to be guided. For sure, we're all dependent on Guru to be guided. And surrendering means to accept the instructions of Guru. But the point is, now that you've got those instructions, you as an intelligent person utilize those instructions to make decisions. So then when you're not using your intelligence and you become so dependent that you can't think clearly, you can't use common sense, you don't go with your gut feeling and so forth, then that dependency becomes a weakness rather than a strength. So I'm not saying we shouldn't be dependent, but in psychological terms, they call it codependency, where, like, you can't function normally without that person. So on your own, you're unhealthy. But so the guru is training you to be thoughtful, to be strong on your own. But strong on your own doesn't mean independent of the guru's instructions. It means you're utilizing those instructions. And you are applying those instructions according to the inspiration Krishna's giving you, the guidance Krishna's giving you, the intelligence you're getting from Krishna. That's the point. Actually, I just had a conversation with a devotee yesterday who was very dependent on being instructed. So he was asking me questions that he shouldn't have asked. That they're just, you know, what do you think about this? Should I do this? And what about that? And, you know, just asking like really simple, practical questions. That's a weakness, that he couldn't decide. He couldn't decide that, you know. Well, you think I should keep this or give this away? Why do you have to ask anybody? You just decide. Do you need it or not need it? You know? I mean, you know, occasionally, you know, you're at home, you know, you're doing something, you ask your wife or your brother, you know, do we really need this anymore? But he was asking questions, many, many questions like that. So, we want to avoid that. I don't know, did that answer your question, Belen? Is that what you're asking? You know, I think you could say, Belen, if a person's dependence on their guru is goes to the point where they can't think clearly about something, then I would say they're not dependent on their guru. I would say that's not dependence. That's just foolishness. Yeah, and just like Belen, she made a video, and so we were going back and forth. You know, so I'd say, I don't know, I don't like this part. Why did you do this? Convince me that this should be the way it should be. Now, she studied video making. I didn't make video. So I ask her and say, now convince me. I want to be convinced. So she's making a decision. I said, here's the idea. Now you go ahead and you make the decisions. Right? And if she has to make decision thinking, well, what does Mahatma Prabhu want about this and that? Is it okay to use this, you know, picture? She wouldn't be able to function. So then we would go back and forth, and she would say, well, I think we should do it this way because of this and that and that. And I said, well, what about this consideration? And she said, oh, I didn't think of that. And then she said, okay, your idea is good, but we should also keep this idea of mine because of this and that. So we work that way. So that's just normal way you would deal with anybody. So, you know, the guru wants you to think that way. But then sometimes the guru would say, no, we can't put this picture in, or we can't have this music, or you can't have this text because it goes against our Siddhanta, or Prabhupada wouldn't appreciate it, and one time Prabhupada said this. And then, oh, the disciples says, oh, okay. You see? So then it's like, oh, we can't do that. Then it's obvious, I can't do that. Then you don't fight it. Does that make sense? Makes sense to me. I hope it makes sense to you. And it's something that you have to discover within your own relationship. Like, for example, Prabhupada said certain things. And if you look at the things he said, it appears that the things he said, certain things, cause problems. Right? Now, did the things he say cause problems, or do the way we understand them cause problems? Or should we have been smart enough to understand that although Prabhupada wanted something, it wasn't going to work in a particular situation, and we should have told him, this won't work in America, it's going to create this problem. You see? So now today, if you had the privilege of hearing older devotees talk about things that happened in the early days, they might say, well, we thought like this because Prabhupada said that and we understood it this way. But if we were smarter, we should have understood that this problem, or we should have understood it would have been a problem, or when we saw the first signs of a problem, we should have done something. Or we should have told Prabhupada. For example, we had problems in our gurukulas in the early days. And so common sense dictates that they would have went to Prabhupada and said, these are the problems we're having. We don't have enough qualified teachers. They're not dealing with the kids properly, etc., etc. the kids are not emotionally stable because the ashram situation isn't good, they miss their parents, it doesn't seem to be working. I don't know if we should continue this. But nobody said that because they thought, well, this is what Prabhupada wanted. Interestingly, when Prabhupada established the idea for Gurukul, he used the word experiment. So experiment means, let's see if it works. So my understanding is, or my feeling as a disciple of Prabhupada, is that if something is not going well, even if he ordered it, as a good disciple, you would want to tweak it so it does go well, or maybe even stop the program because we're not, the situation doesn't allow it. For example, Prabhupada stopped Harinam Sankirtan in India because when the devotees first went to India, beggars would do Harinam Sankirtan. That's how they made money. So when the devotees went out doing Harinam Sankirtan, people thought, they misunderstood, they thought they were beggars. It wasn't good. So Prabhupada said, don't do it anymore. Interesting, isn't it? So that's Prabhupada using, you know, you say, but how could you say that? Because it's a religion of the age. Prabhupada said, stop it, they misunderstand it. So in the same way, Prabhupada may have said something which as a disciple we have to look at and say, within this context, if we do this, it'll be a bad result. So we have to make a decision not to do that. And if we do it blindly and the result is bad, then we are to blame. But you could say, but I was just following Prabhupada's instruction. But the fact is that instruction created a problem for the movement. So you should have had the intelligence to know that you shouldn't have done that. Does that make sense to you? And so you would hear Prabhupada's disciples discussing situations that happened in ISKCON, perhaps in ways different than you might discuss them, in ways that might seem like almost on the verge, almost on the borderline of being critical of Prabhupada. But not being critical, but looking at the situation and saying, okay, Prabhupada came to America, this was his understanding, he made these decisions based on this understanding. Later on, he understood differently, he made other decisions. We could see how he changed decisions. We could see how he asked us what we thought. We could see how he was going along every few years looking at things, making decisions. And how we always didn't understand how to apply what Prabhupada wanted or change certain things that would have been better to fulfill ultimately what he wanted to fulfill. So in hindsight, we understand that. But younger devotees may not understand that, and so they become very narrow in how they would execute instruction. So the point is, as you become more mature, you understand what is the desire. What does your spiritual master really want? And if you understand what he really wants, you may externally disobey one instruction, but you're only doing it to achieve what he wants, because you know what he wants. And you know, if he were now present and he saw what was going on, he'd want you to do something. Or he'd want you to speak out against something. Or he'd want you to stop this program or start another program. So I don't know if that answered your question about being dependent and surrendering. But the point is, Prabhupada never wanted us to be so Krishna conscious and surrender that we did stupid things. That we didn't allow Krishna to guide us. We didn't hear that guidance. And we didn't hear that common sense. So Krishna consciousness is 90% common sense. Isn't it? I mean, isn't this whole class common sense? And it is common sense. And you could say the tragedy is that we even have to give this class, isn't it? I mean, you know, what if you weren't a devotee and you just sat in on this class? You were like somebody new and you'd think, why are they talking about this? What's wrong with these people? Don't their brains work? But the reality is, we know what the reality is, that we can get into this mindset that I don't know anything. I can't make decisions myself. Okay. I think that's clear. And, yes. So what's the title of this class? Does your brain still work? 10 years after joining the Hare Krishna movement, does your brain still work? Your brain is supposed to work better, right? I mean, that's the whole point. You're supposed to have, you know, transcendental vision. Yeah. Yeah. Don't become blind, use our intelligence. And at the same time, it's like Belin, you have to have this combination of feeling that you don't know, but feeling you do know. It's like there's this story. I don't know where the story comes from. It might be I think Prabhupada told it. Anyway, it's a story about in the military, they tell a soldier, go get this, or go do this. And he says, how do I do it? And they go, get out of here. And they go get this, where is it? Get out of there. And they say, go get this, do this. Yes, sir, and he goes. So that's the idea. Well, I don't even know how to do that. I'll figure it out. So there's that sense of, what have I surrendered to? I have surrendered to the order, go do this. But I don't sit there, but Guru Maharaj, how do you do that? No. Go figure it out. You're smart. That's the idea. So I'm dependent on the order. He told me to go there, but now I would use my intelligence to do it. I'm not in this point. But Guru Maharaj, like a lot of times Prabhupada would ask devotees to do things they never did, and he said, Krishna will give you intelligence, just do it. So you have that. If that's, you know, the way it's meant to be done, you do it. Yeah. Trying to help you get this balance, you know, I don't want you to, like, you know, now I ask you to do something, you go, well, Mahatma Prabhu, I don't think that's a good idea, I'm not going to do that. It's not exactly like that. If you have to say that, you say, well, I have another idea, what do you think of that idea? Do you think this would be better? Yeah, of course, as a disciple, that's how you would present it. Mm-hmm. So the title of this lecture is Brain Surgery. Putting the wires back together. You know? Yeah. There's nothing, I think, in a sense, there's nothing more disturbing than to see a devotee not using their full capacity and not being able to make decisions based on common sense. There's nothing worse than that. And also having expectations that their spiritual master will be like an elevator, and all they have to do is just get on the elevator of their spiritual master, and then they can just, you know, kind of sit back and it'll go back to Godhead. It's not like that. The instructions are there for you to follow, and you have to do the work. And you have to understand, and your service to Prabhupada, your service to your spiritual master, is to understand those instructions, apply them intelligently, train other people to, you know, use their minds, think. Like, for example, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the GBC, in approving gurus, they used to have a list of authorized gurus, or they put them through an approval process. And then a few years ago, they came out with a resolution, and they said that this process is not an approval process, because we don't want to approve anybody, because we want you as a disciple to determine if this person is qualified. Because if you don't determine that, you're leaving it up to us. But the decision is always on the perspective or aspiring disciple. They have to make the decision. So they made it clear in the resolution that if we say it's okay for this person to initiate as a Diksha Guru, you still have to make the determination if that person is qualified, if he's the right person for you, and so forth. So we don't just... So again, they want the disciple to make that decision. And you see so often in ISKCON that decisions are made for people. Even who their guru will be is being made for them. Sometimes you're not being told, but subconsciously it's like, you know, it's kind of like, well, this is everyone's guru, so, you know. And really, we you know, there's nothing wrong with that in a sense, because the guru is bona fide. But more ideal is that the disciple makes the decision. Okay, everyone's taking from this guru. Do I want to also? Let me analyze if this is the right thing. What are the pros and cons? That's the way it's supposed to be. Not like, well, don't think too much. Just do it. Prabhu, you know, you just don't understand. Just don't think. It'd be better you just don't think and just do what I say, because you're useless, you know. We don't want to train people that way. Sometimes we have to explain it, but well, you don't understand, let me explain it. Now that you understand it, now you can make the right decision. You know, we want to always give validity to people using their intelligence and common sense, which is really why it's really bad to keep hyping on this thing that women are less intelligent when people don't even understand what intelligence is in the first place. They don't understand. You know, oh, women are less intelligent. So, would you rather get an operation by a trained female surgeon or a male barber? I mean, use your common sense. Although I think barbers were once, in the old days, surgeons. Take your chances. Maybe a barber can do a better job. I doubt it, but, you know, she's a woman. She's less intelligent, even though she's been to Harvard Medical School. Probably she, you know, she can't do the surgery because he's a man. He's smarter, right? So he could do the surgery. Now you think, come on, Mahatma, nobody thinks that way. Don't underestimate the foolishness. What I think it was Albert Einstein, he said, don't underestimate. He said, there's two infinite things in the universe. There's two infinite things, the universe and people's foolishness. Yeah, so don't underestimate foolishness. So Kama Laksha Radhika says, sometimes I'm shy to ask questions, especially to my Guru Maharaj. When I'm with him and he asks, what are your realizations? I freeze up, I say silly things, or when on the phone with him. I know he cares so much, I know he wants me to ask questions. How can I communicate better with him? Also happens that whenever I have a question I want to ask him, I get an answer from a god sister. Yeah, well, I would say first, if you can get the answer from a god sister and you're satisfied, that's good. And then if you have questions, you could say, well, Guru Maharaj, I've had all my questions answered by such and such god sister. She's really good and I'm satisfied. In terms of realization, what I would say about realization is realizations aren't right or wrong or good or bad or you know, score an A, B, C, or D. Realizations are just what you are realizing. And your spiritual master just... okay. I've listened to realizations of young devotees and I find them deep. So I think, you know, realizations are Krishna's just what he's speaking to you. And so I don't think you should feel reluctant. I think you should just feel like, he wants to hear my realizations. That will please him. So I'll just, you know, be open. You don't have to hide anything. You should have to think your spiritual master like your friend, like your father, where, you know, you can reveal what's in your mind, what's in your heart. And even if, just like, you know, you're a little kid and you reveal something to your father, you know, your father doesn't, even if it's silly, he doesn't think it's silly. He thinks it's nice, you know. And so, and another answer, Kamalaksha, I think this is, maybe this is really the essence of the answer. If your spiritual master wants you to do something, if it's pleasing to him to hear your realizations, then you should just think, well, this will make him happy. So I'll tell him what my realization is. What's your realization? My realization was pizza is really good. That's a realization I had yesterday because I had pizza. I realized I really like pizza. And I realized I was really depriving myself all these years of not eating pizza. And it was driving me crazy. And I realized that actually offering pizza to Krishna makes me happy. So you might think, I would never tell my guru that. But I think your guru would find that amazingly interesting and funny. But that you would tell your father that. So your guru is your father. So tell him that. Whatever your realization is, just tell him. Don't feel like, you know, whatever, your mind should be an open slate to him. Your heart should be open to him. Is there a difference from getting the answer from a senior disciple? I feel I don't bother him. Or bother him with my own confusion. Is it wrong to not go to him or keep him informed? I don't think it's wrong not to go to him if you're satisfied with the answer. It's the way Prabhupada arranged it. But if he's asking you, you know, why you're not asking me questions, then just ask him if that's what he wants. Or tell him, you know, I have a lot of questions, but this God sister's answering them, and I feel, you know, I don't want to bother you. Unless you want me to ask you the questions, if you'd rather, me ask you the questions, I can, just let me know. So you just ask him. Because the whole thing is like, with guru and disciple, it's like, you want to please your guru. So sometimes, like I'll have a disciple, and they'll say, well, I say, why didn't you write me for the last 3 months? Well, I don't want to bother you. And I say, no, it bothers me that you don't write me. So if you understand, so now they understand, well, I want them to write me. And it bothers me if they don't write me. So rather than thinking they're bothering me by writing me, now they realize they're bothering me by not writing me. But they didn't know that. Or they could ask, or they could say, I didn't write you because I didn't want to bother you. And I could say, well, how do you know it bothers me if you write me? You didn't ask me. So sometimes you just have to ask, does it bother you if I write you so much? And I might say, no, at least write me every month. Just let me know what's going on. So you can ask your spiritual master that. So Santos says, I have become a lazy hypocrite being born in India. The problem is you're born in India. Keeping Indian standard, imitating West, I become a hypocrite, indecision. Due to the biggest problem of people, have low self-esteem, are wicked. Staying alone, I generally listen to my mind rather than guru and guru and guru. Thank you for hammering my brain. Hammer, hammer, hammer. Dustin, I feel like a blockhead a lot, but feel a bit better when I take instruction and we don't make the same mistakes. Yeah, it's okay to make a mistake once, not twice. It's okay to make a mistake once, but don't make the same mistake twice. Learn from it. Dharmandala, from the very beginning, my guru's instruction was use your intelligence. So I learned a lot about making mistakes, but gradually I pleased him. Yeah, sometimes your guru may want you to just make a mistake. So anyway, like I said, it's unfortunate we have to talk about this, but it's a reality that when you come into Krishna consciousness, you come into a situation where in your life you've never been so dependent on the instruction of another person to guide you. And it's just a new experience. And it can be a problem where you can't think properly. So I think you understand everything. It's a nice balance. And I think we can stop now because we've gone 2 hours, right? 2 hours of Mahatma's japa time has just been evaporated this morning. Yeah. So, is that okay? Does anyone have any other question they're dying to ask? And as I said before, Kamalaksha, sometimes when you have a question, you can try to answer it yourself and see what you come up with. And then you might want to say, well, Guru Maharaj, I had this question and I asked myself how I would answer the question and this is how I answered it. Is this correct? You could do that. Or you could ask that God sister. No, I'm just trying to make you feel bad, Santosh. It's not your fault. We give up class. It's to give class at 8 in the evening in America. It has to be 5 in the morning in Mauritius, which would be 3:30 in the morning next week in South Africa, which is another situation we'll deal with. Yeah. Well, Guru Nisha is saying, I feel lost when I don't ask you. Now, Guru Nisha's situation is different. Because Guru Nishtha does things for me personally. So in that situation, you have to make sure you're doing the right thing. Otherwise, she just might, take all my money and buy me a car because she thinks I like cars. So she's doing all the secretarial work. So, you're booking a ticket on an airplane. Do you want the flight at 6 in the morning? Do you want it at 8 in the evening? You have to ask those questions until the point where you know from experience, well, this is what he wants, so I'll do this. But in terms of your personal life, you have to be a little more independent, because you can see, Guru Nishtha, that most of the personal decisions are really common sense. Okay, so in the beginning, a disciple obviously is going to have more questions, be more dependent. But as you mature, then you'll know how to answer those questions yourself. Not saying that you don't ask questions. And you'll find when you have problems or when you're a younger devotee, you'll have more questions. And as you mature, you'll have more answers. Yes? 12 p.m. in Argentina. Oh, my God. No, 12 p.m. is okay. That's just the afternoon. So we're 6 hours. We're 5 hours. That's all. 12 p.m. Oh, so it's 10 o'clock now on the East Coast. Wow. I kept you up too late. Okay. Everyone, go to sleep. Sorry if I kept you awake. I forgot that it's late there. And we'll say goodbye. And Hare Krishna. I hope this helps. And what you're learning, please share with others, because this is very, very important information, I think. Jai Jai Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.